Prince Alexei's education continues. I won't tell you the details of my training with the queen, how I learned to be her valet, my struggles with her annoyance. All this you'll learn in your training with the prince, for in his love for you, he intends to make you his maidservant, clearly. But these things are nothing when one is devoted to the master or mistress. I had to learn serenity in facing humiliations that brought others into play. And this was not easy. My first days with the queen were mostly training in her bedchamber. I found myself rushing as diligently as Prince Gerald had to obey her slightest whim, and, proving very clumsy with her clothes, was often severely punished. But the queen did not want me merely for these servile tasks which other slaves had been trained to perform to perfection. She wanted to study me, to break me down and make of me a toy for her complete amusement. A toy, Beauty whispered. She had felt like a toy in the queen's hands exactly. And it amused her greatly in the first weeks to see me serve other princes and princesses for her pleasure. The first I had to serve was Prince Gerald. He was now nearing the end of his service, but he did not know that, and he was in a paroxysm of jealousy at my reformation. The queen, however, had splendid ideas for rewarding him and soothing him, and at the same time developing me according to her wishes. Daily he was brought to her chamber and bound with his hands over his head against the wall so that he might watch me struggling with my tasks. And this was a torment to him until he realized that one of my tasks would be to give him pleasure. I was being driven to distraction then by the queen's paddle, the flat of her hand, and the struggle to learn grace and accomplishment. All day I fetched, laced shoes, bound girdles, brushed hair, polished jewels, and performed any other menial task the queen wished. My buttocks forever sore, my thighs and calves marked from the paddle, my face stained with tears as any other slave in the castle. And when the queen could see that Prince Gerald's jealousy had hardened his penis to extremity, when he was all but ready to discharge his passion without the aid of any stimulant. Then she set me to bathing him and satisfying him. I can't tell you how degrading this was to me. His body was nothing but my enemy. And yet I was to fetch a bowl of warm water, a sea sponge, and with my teeth only to hold it, bathe his genitals. He was positioned on a low table for this, kneeling obediently as I washed his buttocks, dipped the sponge again, bathed his scrotum, and finally his penis. But the queen wanted more than this. I must now use my tongue to cleanse him. I was horrified and shedding tears like any princess. But she was adamant. With my tongue, I licked his penis, the balls, and then delved into the crack of his buttocks, even entering into his anus, which had a sour, almost salty taste to it. All the while, he showed his obvious pleasure and longing. His buttocks were sore, of course, and it gave me great satisfaction that the queen seldom spanked him any more herself, but rather had it done by his groom before he was brought into her presence. So he didn't suffer for her. Rather, he suffered in the slaves' hall, ignored by those around him. Yet, it was mortifying to me that my tongue stroking his welts and red marks gave him pleasure. Finally, the queen ordered him to kneel up, his hands behind his back, and told me I should now fully reward him. I knew what this meant, yet I pretended I did not. She told me to take his penis in my mouth and drain it. I can't explain how I felt then. I felt I could not do it, and yet within seconds I had obeyed, so afraid of displeasing her as I was, and his thick penis was pushing against the back of my throat, my lips and jaws aching as I tried to suck it properly. The queen gave me instructions to make my strokes long, to use my tongue, and to go faster and faster. She spanked me unmercifully as I obeyed, her smacking blows in perfect rhythm with my sucking. At last, his seed filled my mouth. I was commanded to swallow it. But the queen was not at all pleased with my reticence. She said that I must show no disinclination towards anything. Beauty nodded, remembering the prince's words to her in the inn, that even the lowly must be served for his pleasure. So she sent for all those princes who had been tortured over a day's time in the Hall of Punishments, and led me to a large adjoining parlor. When 6 young men were brought in on their knees, I begged her to be merciful the only way I could, with my moans and kisses. I can't tell you how their presence affected me. I'd been mistreated by the peasants in the kitchen. I'd humbly, greedily obeyed a rude stable boy. But these seemed both lower and higher than those others. They were princes of my same rank in the world, haughty, proud in their own lands, and also they were abject slaves as lowly now as I was. I couldn't understand my own misery. I realized then that there would be endless variations in humiliation. It was not a hierarchy of punishments I faced, it was, rather, endless changes. But I was too frightened of failing the queen to think very much. Again, I lost sight of the past and the future. As I knelt at her feet, weeping silently, she ordered all of these princes who were sore and aching and starved from the torture of the Hall of Punishments to take paddles from the chest she kept for the purpose. They formed a line of 6 to my right, each on his knees, his penis hardened as much by the sight of my suffering as by any pleasure that soon awaited them. I was told to kneel up with my hands behind my back. As I ran this gauntlet, I would not even be allowed the easier and more concealing position on all 4s. Rather, I must struggle, straight-backed, my knees apart, my own organ revealed, my progress slow as I sought to escape their paddles. They could see my face as well. I felt more exposed than I had when tethered in the kitchen. The queen's game was simple. I would be made to run the gauntlet, and the prince whose paddle pleased her the most, that is, the one whose paddle struck me the hardest and fiercest, would then be rewarded before I again commenced the gauntlet. And so on. I was urged by her to great speed. If I faltered, if my punishers accomplished too many blows, I should be delivered over to them for an hour of rough sport out of her sight, I was promised. This terrified me. She would not even be there. It would not be for her pleasure. I commenced at once. All their blows felt the same to me, loud, violent, and their laughter filled my ears as I struggled awkwardly in a position they had long ago learned to accomplish easily. Rest came only with each little session of satisfying the prince who had marked me the most severely. I must return to him where he knelt. The others were free to watch, and watch they did. And then, given permission to offer their instructions. I had a 6 masters, eager to teach me contemptuously how to satisfy the one whom they supported with their arms, as he shut his eyes and enjoyed the warm, anxious sucking I afforded. Of course, all of them prolonged it as best they could for fullest satisfaction. And the queen, who sat nearby, her elbow on the arm of her chair, watched all this approvingly. Strange changes occurred in me as I performed my duties. There would be the frenzy of struggling past their paddles, my smarting buttocks, my sore knees, and above all, the shame that they could so easily see my face and my genitals. But as I took to sucking, I found myself lost in contemplating the organ in my mouth, its size, its shape, its taste even, and the sour, salty taste of the fluids emptied into me. It was the rhythm of the sucking as much as anything else. The voices around me were a chorus that became noise at some point, and an odd feeling of being weak and abject came over me. It was very similar to the moments I'd experienced with my tall, stable boy Lord, when we had been alone in the garden, and he had made me squat on the table. I felt my excitement even on the surface of my skin then. And so it was now, sucking these various organs and being filled with their seed. I can't explain it. It became pleasurable. It became pleasurable because it was repeated and I was helpless. And it was repeated always as a respite from the paddle, the frenzy of the paddle. My buttocks would throb, but they felt warm. They were tingling, and I was tasting this delicious cock that was pumping its force into me. I found I liked having so many eyes watch me, but I did not admit this to myself all at once. I felt not liking so much as this weakness again, this limpness of the spirit. I was lost in my suffering, my struggles, my anxiousness to please. Well, so it would be with each new task that lay before me. I would at first resist with terror. I would cling to the queen with my heart. Then, at some point in the midst of unspeakable humiliation, I would be released into some state of calm in which my punishment became sweet to me. I saw myself as one of these princes, one of these slaves. When they instructed me in sucking the penis better, I listened to them. When they paddled me, I received the blow, bent my body in response to it. Perhaps it's impossible to explain. I was moving towards yielding. When finally the six princes were sent away, all of them properly rewarded, the queen took me into her arms and rewarded me with her kisses. As I lay on the pallet by her bed, I felt the most delicious exhaustion. It seemed even the air stirring around me gave me pleasure. I felt it against my skin as if my nakedness were being stroked. And I fell asleep, content that I had served her properly. But my next great test of strength came one afternoon when she, very cross with me for my ineptitude at brushing her hair, sent me to be the plaything of the princesses. I could scarcely believe my ears. She herself would not even deign to witness it. She sent for Lord Gregory and told him I was to be taken to the special punishment hall, and there given to the assembled princesses. For 1 hour they could do with me what they liked. And then I was to be bound in the garden and have my thighs whipped with a leather thong and left there until morning. This was my first great separation from the queen, and I could not imagine myself, naked, helpless, and fit only for punishment, given over to the princesses. I had dropped the queen's hairbrush twice. I had spilled some wine earlier. All of this had seemed beyond my control and my finest efforts. When Lord Gregory gave me several hard spanks, I was full of shame and fear. And as we neared the special punishments hall, I felt I could not move by my own power. He had placed a leather collar around my neck. He pulled me along, spanking me only lightly as he said the princesses must have the full enjoyment of me. Before we entered the room, he put a sign about my neck by means of a small ribbon. He showed it to me first, and I shuddered to see it announce me as clumsy, willful, and bad, and in need of correction. He then exchanged my leather collar for another, which had numerous small metal rings attached to it, each ring just large enough for a finger to be hooked into it. That way the princesses could pull me this way or that, he said, and woe to me if I showed the slightest resistance. Cuffs with the same rings were put on my ankles and my wrists. I felt myself scarcely able to move as I was pulled towards the door. I did not know how to assess my emotions. As the door opened, I saw them all. Some 10 princesses, a naked harem lounging under the watchful eye of a groom. All girls being rewarded for good behavior by this hour of leisure. I learned later that if anyone is to be severely punished, he or she is given to them, but on that day they had not expected anyone. They shrieked with delight, clapping their hands and immediately conferring with one another. All around me I saw their long hair, red, golden, raven hair in deep waves and thick curls, their naked breasts and bellies and those hands pointing to me and shielding their own shy and shameful whispers. They clustered about me. I crouched, trying to conceal myself, but Lord Gregory lifted my head by means of the collar. I felt their hands all over me, feeling my skin, slapping my cock and touching my balls as they squealed and laughed. Never had some of them seen a man so closely, save for their lords, who had complete power over them. I was trembling violently. I had not given way to tears and was most afraid that I would turn and try to escape, and receive only some worse punishment. I tried desperately to remain coldly indifferent. But their round, naked breasts were maddening me. I could feel their thighs brush me, even their moist pubic hair as they crowded about examining me. And I was their complete slave, whom they scorned and admired. When I felt their fingers touching my balls, weighing them, stroking my penis, I was maddened. It was infinitely worse than my time with the princes, because I could already hear their voices turning to mock contempt with the wish to discipline me, to return me to the queen as obedient as they were. "Oh, so you're a bad little prince, are you?" said one of them in my ear. She, a lovely raven-haired one with pierced ears adorned with gold. Her hair was tickling my neck, and when her fingers twisted the nipples of my chest, I felt myself losing control. I feared I would break and try to flee. Lord Gregory, meantime, withdrew to the corner of the room. The grooms could aid them as they wished, he said, and he urged them to do their work well for the queen's sake. This brought loud cries of delight. I was immediately slapped by several hard little hands. My buttocks were pulled open. I felt tiny fingers pushing into them. I squirmed, twisted, trying to hold still, trying not to look at them. And when I was pulled up and my hands were tied over my head from a ceiling chain, I was immensely relieved that I could no longer try to escape if I weakened. The grooms gave them what paddles they wanted. A number of them chose long leather straps, which they tried first across their hands. In the special punishment hall, they had no need to stay on their knees and could stand around me as they liked. At once, the round handle of a paddle was thrust into my anus. My legs were dragged wide apart. I was shuddering, and when the paddle handle proceeded to rape me with back and forth thrusts as roughly as any cock I'd ever received, I knew my face was red, and that my tears were threatening. Now and then, in the midst of all this, I'd feel cool little lips pressed to my ear, my face pinched, my chin stroked, and then they would assault my nipples again. "Beautiful little tits," said one of the girls as she did this. She had flaxen hair, as straight as yours. "When I finished my work, they'll feel like breasts," she said, and proceeded to stretch them and stroke them. All the while, to my shame, my cock was hard as if it knew its mistresses, even when I refused to acknowledge them. This girl with the flaxen hair laid her thighs against mine, growing fiercer as she pulled on my nipples. I felt her wet sex against me. "You think you are too good to suffer at our hands, Prince Alexei?" she crooned. I wouldn't answer her. Then the paddle handle in my anus thrust harder and more roughly. My hips were pushed forward as cruelly as they had ever been by my stable boy lord, and I was almost lifted off the floor by the thrusts. "You think you are too good for us to punish?" she asked again. The other girls laughed and watched her as she commenced to slap my cock hard from right to left. I winced. I could not quite control myself. I wished for all the world that I were gagged, but I wasn't. She ran her fingers over my lips and my teeth to remind me of this and commanded me to answer her respectfully. And when I didn't, she took her paddle now, and withdrawing the instrument of rape, she proceeded as she kept her face next to mine, her eyelashes tickling the side of my face, to spank me soundly. Of course, I was already sore, as we all are, always, and her blows were very hard, and they were without rhythm. She caught me off guard, and when I winced and groaned, all the girls laughed appreciatively. My cock was slapped by others, my nipples twisted by them. But she had clearly shown her supremacy. "You will beg me for mercy, Prince Alexei," she said. "I am not the queen. You may beg me, for all the good it will do you." They thought all that was amusing, too, and she continued to spank me harder and harder. I prayed she would break the skin before my will broke, but she was too clever for that. She spread the blows. She had them lower the chain slightly so she could spread my legs even wider. She held my cock now in her left hand, tightly, roughly, running her open palm over the tip to torment me, and then tightening her grip again as she spanked furiously. When she slapped my nipples and my cock and lifted my balls in her hands, I felt the tears flowing, and overcome with shame, I groaned, unable to conceal it. It was an astonishing moment of pain and pleasure. My buttocks were raw. But she had only just begun. She ordered the other princesses to lift my legs in front of me. I felt terror to feel myself hanging from the chain above me. They did not bind my ankles to my arms. They merely held them up, in place, as she brought her blows up from under, as hard as before, and then, covering my balls with her left hand, paddled me from the front as hard as she could as I struggled and moaned, now uncontrollably. Meantime, the other girls were feasting their eyes on me, touching me still and enjoying my misery immensely. They even kissed the backs of my legs, my calves, my shoulders. But the blows came harder and faster. She had me set down again, spread wide again, and went to work in earnest. I think she meant to break the skin if she could, but I was now broken down and wept uncontrollably. This was what she wanted, and as I gave in, she applauded it. "Very good, Prince Alexei, very good. Let all of that spiteful pride go. Very good. You know very well you deserve it." "That's better. That is exactly what I want to see," she said, almost affectionately. Delicious tears as she touched them with her fingers, her paddle never stopping. Then she had my hands released. I was forced down on all fours, and she drove me about the room, telling me that I must move in a circle. Of course, she drove me faster and faster. I didn't even realize now that I was no longer restrained. That is, I did not even realize I might have broken and run. I had been defeated. And finally, it was as always when the punishment works. I could think of nothing but escaping each blow of her paddle. And how could I do that? Merely twist, squirm, try to avoid it. She was meantime very worked up with her commands, driving me faster. I rushed past the naked feet of the other princesses. I saw them step aside for me. And now she told me that crawling was indeed too good for me, that I must place my arms on the ground and my chin and must inch along in that manner, my buttocks high in the air where she might paddle them. "Arch your back," she said. "Down, I want your chest pressed to the ground." And as skillfully as any page or mistress, she forced me along as the others praised her and marveled at her skill and stamina. I had never been in such a position. It was so ignominious I didn't want to picture it, my knees still scraping along, my back painfully arched, my buttocks thrust as high as before, and she commanding me always to move with greater speed as my buttocks grew ever more raw. They were throbbing as the blood throbbed in my ears, and my tears were now blinding me. And it was then that that moment came I spoke of earlier. I belonged to this girl with the flaxen hair, this impudent, clever princess who herself was punished as shamefully as I was day in and day out, but for the moment could do as she wished with me. I struggled along, glimpsing Lord Gregory's boots, the boots of the grooms, hearing the girls' laughter. I reminded myself that I must please the queen, I must please Lord Gregory. And finally, I must please my cruel, flaxen-haired mistress. She paused for breath. She exchanged her paddle for a leather strap and proceeded to lash me. At first it felt weaker than the paddle, and I felt a merciful relief. But she immediately learned to swing it with such strength it walloped the welts on my buttocks. Now she let me stop so she might feel these welts. She pinched them, and in the silence I could hear my own low crying. "I think he's ready, Lord Gregory," said the princess. And Lord Gregory said softly, "He thought I was. I thought it meant I would be returned to the queen." This was very foolish of me. It was only that I would now be lashed swiftly into the hall of punishments. Of course, there were a handful of princesses chained from the ceiling, their legs tied up in front of them. Now she brought me up to the first of these. She told me to rise and to spread my legs very wide as I stood before her. I saw the captive princess's pained face, her blushing cheeks, and then her naked and moist sex peering shyly from its wreath of golden pubic hair, much ready for pleasure or more pain after days of teasing. But it hung low, at the level of my chest, I suppose, and that was just as my tormentor liked it. For she ordered me to bend over towards it and to thrust my hips out behind me. "Give me your buttocks," she said. She stood behind me. The other girls pulled my legs wider than I myself could spread them. Again I was told to arch my back and to put my arms around the bound and doubled princess slave hanging in front of me. "Now you will pleasure her with your tongue," said my captor, "and see you do it well, as she has suffered long and for not even half your clumsiness." I looked at the bound princess. She was mortified, though desperately hungry for pleasure. And I pressed my face into her sweet, hungry little sex, rather eager to pleasure her. But as my tongue delved into her swollen cleft, as I licked her little clitoris and her swollen lips, I was walloped by the belt continuously. My flaxen-haired one chose one welt after another for her work, and I was in great pain as the bound princess finally shuddered with pleasure in spite of herself. Of course, there were others who had been punished enough and now must be rewarded. I did my work as best I could, finding a refuge in it. And then, with a panic, I saw there were no more to be rewarded. I was again at the hands of my captor, with nothing so sweet as a bound princess in my arms. And again, my chest and chin pressed to the floor, I struggled along on my knees under the wallops of her strap, back to the special punishment hall. Now all the princesses begged Lord Gregory to make me pleasure them, but Lord Gregory silenced them at once. They had their lords and ladies to serve, and he would not hear one word from them more unless they wanted to be hung from the ceiling of the other hall as they deserved. I was now taken away and out into the garden. As the queen ordered, I was taken to a large tree, and my hands were tied up so high that my feet barely touched the grass beneath them. It was growing dusk, and I was left there. It had been excruciating, but I had obeyed. I had not run away, and there had come that moment. I was tormented now only by usual needs. My aching cock, which might not be rewarded for another day or more by the queen, due to her anger. But the garden was quiet, full of twilight sounds. The sky was purple and the trees were thickening with shadows. In a little while they grew skeletal. The sky was white with evening, and then darkness fell around me. I had resigned myself to sleep in this manner. I was too far from the trunk of the tree to rub my miserable cock against it, or I would have done this, tormented as I was, for whatever pleasure the friction could give me. And from habit, more than training, its hardness would not die away. I remained stiff and tense as though expecting something. Then Lord Gregory appeared. He materialized out of the dark in his gray velvet, with the gold on the edge of his cloak gleaming. I saw the shimmer of his boots and the dull sheen of the leather strap he carried. More punishment, I thought wearily. but I must obey. I am a slave prince, and there is nothing to be done for it. Pray I have the grace to bear it in silence and without struggling. But he drew close to me and commenced to talk to me. He told me I had comported myself very well and asked me if I knew the name of the princess who had tormented me. I said, "No, my lord," respectfully taking some relief that I had pleased him. He is very hard to please, harder than the queen. He then told me her name was Princess Lynette, and she was new and had made a great impression on everyone. She was the personal slave of the Grand Duke André. What is this to me, I thought, I serve the queen. But he asked me pleasantly enough if I had found her pretty. I winced. How could I help it? I could remember her breasts well enough when she pressed them to me while her paddle made me smart and groan. I could remember her dark blue eyes for the one or two instants when I had not been too ashamed to look at them. I don't know, my lord. I would think she would not be here, I said, were she not pretty. For that impertinence he gave me at least 5 rapid cracks with his belt. I was sore enough to be immediately in tears. He has often said that if he had his way, he would keep all slaves that sore always. Then their buttocks would be so tender that all he would have to do was stroke them with a feather. But as I stood there, my arms stretched painfully above me, my body pushed off balance by his blows, I was aware that he was particularly angered and fascinated by me. Why else would he come here to torment me? He had a castle of slaves to torment. It gave me some strange satisfaction. I was conscious of my body, its obvious muscularity, what to some eyes was surely its beauty. Well, he came around and he said to me that Princess Lynette was unsurpassed in many respects, and that her attributes were fired with an unusual spirit. I feigned boredom. I was to hang in this position all night. He was a gnat, I thought. But then he told me that he had been to the queen and told her how well Princess Lynette had punished me, that Princess Lynette showed a flair for command and shrank from nothing. I began to grow afraid. Then he assured me the queen had been glad to hear it. And so was her master, the Grand Duke André, he added. And both were curious and somewhat regretful that such a display had not been witnessed by them, being wasted only on other slaves. I waited. So a little amusement has been arranged, he continued when I said nothing. You shall perform a little circus for her highness. Surely you have seen the trainers of animals in circuses, who with deft strokes of their whips place their trained cats on stools and force them through hoops or other tricks for the amusement of the audience. I felt desperate, but I did not answer. Well, on the morrow, when your handsome buttocks have healed somewhat, such a little spectacle shall be arranged with the Princess Lynette and her strap to drive you through the performance. I knew my face was scarlet with rage and indignation, or worse, it showed my frantic despair. But it was too dark for him to see it. I could see only the gleam of his eyes, and how I knew that he smiled, I wasn't certain. And you shall perform your little tricks quickly and well, he went on, for the queen is eager to see you hop upon this stool and that, crouch on all fours, and then jump through the hoops that are just now being prepared for you, because you are a two-legged pet with hands as well as feet. You can as well swing from a little trapeze that is being prepared for you, with Princess Lynette's paddle ever to spur you on, and entertain all of us as you show your agility. It seemed unthinkable to me, performing this. It was not service, after all, not the dressing and adorning of my queen, not the fetching for her to show I accepted her power and worshipped her. Not suffering for her, receiving her blows, but rather a series of willfully executed ignominious positions. I couldn't endure the thought of it, but worst of all, I couldn't imagine myself managing to do it. I should be dreadfully humiliated when I failed in will, and was then dragged off again to the kitchen, surely. I was beside myself with rage and fear, and this menace, this brutal Lord Gregory, whom I hated so, was smiling at me. He took hold of my cock and pulled me forward. Of course, he had it at the root, not near the tip, where it might have given me some pleasure. And as he tugged my hips so that I lost my footing, he said, "This will be a grand spectacle. The Queen, the Grand Duke, and others shall witness it, and Princess Lynette shall be very eager to impress the court. See to it that she does not outshine you." Beauty shook her head then and kissed Prince Alexei. She now saw what he meant when he said he had only just begun to yield. "But Alexei," she said gently, almost as if she could save him from his fate, as if it hadn't already happened long ago. "When you were brought by the stable boy to the Queen's presence, when she made you fetch the golden balls for her in the parlor, was this not something of the same thing?" She stopped. "Oh, how shall I ever do these things?"
"But you can do them. All of them, that's the point of my story," he said. "Each new thing seems terrible because it is new, because it is a variation. But at the heart, it is all the same, ultimately. The paddle, the strap, the exposure, the bending of the will. Only they infinitely vary it. But you do well to mention this first session with the Queen. It was similar. But remember, I was raw and shaken from the kitchen and thoughtless. I had regained my strength since then, and my strength had to be broken down again. Now perhaps, had the little circus been constructed when I was fresh from the kitchen, I would have taken to it eagerly then, too. But I think not. It encompassed much greater exposure, much greater stamina, much greater surrender of self into positions and attitudes that appeared grotesque and inhuman. No wonder they need no real cruelty. No fire, no whips to teach their lessons or amuse themselves," he sighed.
"But what happened? Did it come about?"
"Yes, of course, though Lord Gregory had no need of telling me beforehand, except to rob me of sleep. I spent a painful, restless night. I awoke many times thinking others were near. The stable boys or the kitchen servants, that they had found me, helpless and alone, and meant to torment me. But no one approached me. During the night, I heard whispers of conversation as lords and ladies walked under the stars. Now and then, I even heard a slave driven past, crying fitfully under the inevitable smack of the leather. A torch would flicker under the trees, nothing more. When the morning came, I was bathed and rubbed with oil, and all this time, my penis was not touched, save when it flagged. Then it was cleverly awakened. At twilight, the slaves' hall was full of talk of the circus. I was told by my groom, Leon, that the circle for the performance had been prepared in a spacious hall near the Queen's apartments. There would be 4 rows of lords and ladies surrounding it, and they would bring their slaves, too, to see the amusement. The slaves were in a state of dread lest they be made to perform. He said nothing more than that, but I knew what he was thinking. It was a grueling test of self-control. He combed my hair, rubbed much oil into my buttocks and thighs, even oiled my pubic hair a little and brushed it so it would be glossy. I was quiet. I was thinking. And when I was finally brought into the room, into the shadows near the wall from which I could see the illuminated circle, I understood what I had to do. There were stools of various heights and various circumferences. There were trapezes hung so, and great hoops mounted perpendicular to the floor. Candles burned everywhere on high stands among the chairs of the lords and ladies who were already assembled. And the Queen, my cruel Queen, sat in state with the Grand Duke Andre beside her. Princess Lynette stood in the middle of the circle. So she would be allowed to stand, I mused, and I should be driven in on hands and knees. Well, I must make up my mind. And as I knelt there waiting, I decided that resistance was impossible. Were I to try to hide my tears, were I to grow tense, my humiliation would only be more dreadful. I must make up my mind to do what I had to do. Princess Lynette looked exquisite. Her flaxen hair hung free down her back where it had been trimmed only enough to expose all of her buttocks. She had no more than a pink blush there from the paddle, and a blush on her thighs and calves, too, which, far from disfiguring her, appeared to shape her and improve her. It was infuriating. About her neck she wore a collar of gilded and worked leather that was a mere adornment. She wore boots as well, heavily gilded with high heels. And of course I was utterly naked. I did not even have a collar, which meant I must control myself at her commands. I could not even be dragged this way and that. So I could see exactly what I must succeed in doing. She would put on a great show of inventiveness. She would be ready to vent her anger on me in commands of hurry and quickly, and scold and condemn for the slightest disobedience. She would therefore win the applause of the audience. And the more I struggled, the more she would shine, just as Lord Gregory had indicated. The only way I could triumph was through perfect obedience. I must execute all her commands to perfection, and I must not struggle either externally or inwardly. I must weep if I must weep, but I must do all she commanded, even if to think of it sent my heart to thudding in my wrists and temples. Finally, everyone was ready. A handful of exquisite little princesses had served the wine, swinging their pretty little hips and showing me some delightful sights as they bent over to fill the cups. And they, too, were to see me punished. All the court, for the first time, was to see it. Then, with a clap of her hands, the queen ordered that her pet, Prince Alexei, be brought in, and that Princess Lynette tame me and train me before their very eyes. Lord Gregory gave me the usual quick smacks with the paddle. At once I was in the circle of light, my eyes hurt by it for the moment, and then I saw my trainer's high-heeled boots coming nearer. In a moment of impetuousness, I rushed to her and kissed both her shoes at once. The court gave a loud murmur of approval. I continued to shower her with kisses, and I thought, my evil Lynette, my strong, cruel Lynette, you are my queen now. It was as if my passion were a fluid that coursed through all my limbs, not only my swollen cock. I arched my back and spread my legs ever so slightly without even being told to do so. At once the spanks commenced, but clever little demon that she was, she said, Prince Alexei, you will show your queen that you are a very quick-witted pet, and you shall answer all my commands with your compliance, and you shall answer all my questions, too, with perfect courtesy. So I would have to speak. I felt the blood rush to my face, but she gave no time for my terror, and I said with a quick nod of the head, Yes, my princess, to a murmur of the audience's approval. She was strong, as I have told you. She could spank much harder than the queen, and as hard as ever the kitchen boys or the stable boys had spanked me. I knew she meant to leave me sore, if nothing else, because immediately she gave me several loud cracks, and she had that knack which some of our punishers have of lifting the buttocks with the paddle as she spanked them.